Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Today, we have a special guest, Cherry Chan. She is from realestatetaxtips.ca. Also, you can find her on Instagram with the same handle, and she has an amazing YouTube channel as well, which is where we discovered her, and we had to have her on the show. It's tax season here, a lot of pressing questions. So, Cherry, thank you for joining us. We're super stoked to have you go through some tax tips that apply to Canadians today.
Yeah, thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Tom, for having me as well. Thank you. Appreciate this.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So this has been a bit of a weird year for real estate investors and people in real estate in general with taxes, some different things surrounding trusts and things of that nature that have come to play that we can probably get into. But just out the gates, I'm sure there's some things you see all the time that people make mistakes on. So can you highlight a few of those for me?
Okay, so people often tend to make decisions without involving their accountant. And so by the time we get to handle the situation, it's already too late, or we're stuck with this type of tax bill. We already sold this property and it turns out that you have to owe this much money. The planning part is where the value comes in. You come to us at the very beginning, even before you buy the property, we analyze your situation and then talk about the possibility of like maybe potentially setting up a corporation. Maybe it's not for you, which we get. Sometimes we know, but then at least you are prepared ahead of time. And then throughout the process, we often tell our clients, we have to ask like really intimate questions. Are you trying to have a baby? You need to let your accountant know, because if you are self-employed, then you may want to start paying yourself and then so you can collect EI on the other side, right? Like all these intimate questions that we need to ask, like annually, we ask the client, is your marital status still stay the same? Because sometimes they divorce, they don't tell us, or they are now married, they don't tell us. But we need all these information in the tax return. So the biggest mistake is, going back to your question, is that they don't come to us early enough and they don't involve the accountant throughout the process. Earlier this year, I just had a client who's like contemplating accepting a lowball offer, because he really wants to get out of the deal. And what the client doesn't understand is that, yeah, you're accepting the lowball offer, which is fine. The problem is that the client also refinanced multiple times and pulled out the equity. And so now he's left with a tax bill to pay. He actually has to pay like $20,000 in terms of tax. Even after he sold the property, he has to come out from his pocket because he refinanced multiple times. So having those perspective and understanding before selling would prepare you. And also, like, you're stuck with the structure. It is fine. It is what it is. You own it personally. But at the same time, if you talk to us, we've worked with clients that, hey, maybe you should contribute to your RSP for this year. I know next year you're planning to retire or planning to start your own business. Next year, after a few months, you can take the money out. Just by splitting income with yourself, you would be saved thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars.
Interesting. Okay. And do people make this mistake? Is it like a fear-based thing where they don't want to pay for the 1 hour of questionings they're going to ask? Or is it just that they don't think to make the call? What do you think the origin of this mistake happening is?
A lot of it is because they don't think tax implication. They don't realize that they live in Canada, there is always tax implication for whatever decision that you make, sadly. So they never really thought about talking to us. Once they become our clients, like really proactive, some of our clients decided to unsubscribe from our email because we're so proactive in following up and following up and following up. So to that end, once they become our clients, we do have like a plan of actions and essentially following up. But before they become our clients, that's where the problem is. Or transition, like, hey, we sold this property and now we're filing taxes. And what would happen next, right?
Gotcha. Yeah. And with that example you gave of your client that had the multiple refinances and they had to pay that 20K of taxes, that was a rental property you were referring to, right?
Yes, yes.
That must have been the capital gains that they incurred. If that's the case, how does the capital gains work? Does it go based off of the last value of your refi that you did, or the original purchase price of the property?
Original purchase price. Assuming simple structure, assuming you own it personally, you purchase the property for $500,000 and then it appreciated to $700,000. Now you can pull out, say, $100,000 more equity from the property. But when it comes down to my calculation of capital gain when you sell the property, I'm still going to base it off $500,000, your original purchase price.
Right.
Now, there are other stuff that can be added to it, like closing costs and all these other stuff. But when it comes down to calculation of capital gain, it is still going to be based on the original purchase price. Now, it could appreciate it to $2 million. And it doesn't really matter how much mortgage is outstanding.
Gotcha.
The capital gain is always calculated based on the initial purchase price. Now, on the flip side, that's also the benefit of investing in real estate, right? You can cash out some of your equity that you make, cash out some of the appreciation that you make without paying taxes,
right?
Which is awesome. But then people often forget about that when they sell. So then there is not a lot left afterwards, right?
Yeah, the government will always get you a tax, whether it's before or after.
Yeah.
So in that example too, if he wanted to avoid that, would he then reach out to you guys and run the math as to what his lowest purchase price or offer that he should accept on that property to not pay that tax? Is that something that you guys would do with him?
Yeah, yeah. So he's our client, so we would have run that scenario. But by the time he also reached out, he is already at offer, like, you know, accepted, or, you know, there's no offer type of situation down to the wire. Yeah. Hey, here is your counter. This is the date. And if you don't accept it by this time, then you're done. We don't have that deal. Truth to be told, he might still not have a choice. He just didn't recognize how much he has to pay for it before, but he truly wanted to get rid of the liability or like the negative cash flowing property. So he didn't have a choice. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Awesome. Okay. So I know we asked you to some tips and I jumped right into common mistakes because I always like to know what are the mistakes people make and then we can avoid them. But if you had to give people some of these tips going forward, what are some things that people can do?
So have the initial consultation or initial planning session with your own accountant. Doesn't have to be me. It could be anyone that has a little bit of knowledge into the real estate taxes. Majority of the tax practitioners out there, they would say that, oh, there is no reason to set up a corporation the moment that you tell them. But they make the judgment really purely from their own perspective without really thinking about like what type of investment you're operating. We know people who are buying a piece of land and building essentially Airbnb cottages on it, and the land and the real estate actually worth nothing. And it's the operating business that's worth something. Like a lot of people tend to make general blanket about, hey, you should not set up a corporation, there's no benefit, without really considering the type of investment strategy people are investing in, without considering their risk tolerance, where the money, the down payment is coming in from. If the down payment is coming in from another active business, investing in corporation is a lot more advantageous. And then also the scale, how much you want to scale it. Is it going to be like 3 properties and I'm done, I don't want to do anything else type of thing? Or is it just going to be, you want to scale, I want to retire using this portfolio, I want to create a cash flow of like $10,000 to $20,000 a month? So two different type of mentality and strategy would be different. So having those planning sessions ahead of time would help you avoid a lot of unexpected issues down the road. Now, there's a lot of common myth on the street as well. People often say you need to have 3 properties, set up a corporation, otherwise no point. So then people wait until they have 3 properties and then they set up the corporation. You need to have that 3 properties inside a corporation to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
So those are like different things. We do work with our clients. Sometimes we do advise on our clients, hey, like Tom, you have a kid right now.
Yeah.
And we want you to set up a will, not to our benefit. You just need to set up a will because now you have someone to protect as well, not just you. Everyone should set up a will. And if you have a corporation, then your corporation can be in your secondary will to avoid probate tax if you pass away.
Right.
So these are little things that needs to be taken into account beyond just like, hey, one blanket statement. Most tax practitioner would give that statement. I have someone on YouTube who's trolling me on like, oh, majority of the people shouldn't set up a corporation. I agree, a lot of people shouldn't, but a lot of people should as well.
Yeah.
So planning session is a number one thing. Number two is just get yourself educated. Absorb as much free content out there as possible. Understand what's deductible, what's not deductible. Keep the receipts and learn to play by the book, what the income tax act says. And do not leave a dime for them to pick up. Essentially, maximizing your tax deduction is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm all about the education too. And I talk to Brandon about this all the time. Like YouTube, I just binge it not every night, but a lot of nights I do. It's all educational stuff. And the algorithm is so good that it just feeds you some quality content to learn. And this is a plug for you. Like if you're wanting to learn any tax tips, like your channel is amazing for that. And especially for real estate investors, because you've really carved out a nice niche there. And even if, like, to use the example of, I learned this, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong on this, mm-hmm. but if you buy a rental property and you sell it before renting it out to someone, mm-hmm. you're likely going to incur 100% capital gains versus 50%. Is that correct or am I a little off?
It's not entirely correct, but it's not entirely wrong either. So you have a point. Now, if you buy a property and you sell it within 365 days, renting or no renting, with that 365 days, unless there is a reason for you to sell that property, some new family members came into your family. Also, you are required to relocate by your employer. There are some exceptions to that rule, but basically, if you sell it within 365 days, even if you rented it out for like 2 months, now it's a blanket statement. You are required to report it as income. So what it means is that when you buy the property for $500, you sell it for $600, that $100,000 additional would be 100% taxable. Whereas if you rent it out and you hold the property for beyond the 365 days, then they look at the criteria that's established by previous court case to analyze your transaction and see if it should be a capital gain transaction or an income transaction.
Gotcha. So it's more so timeline versus rented versus not rented. So even like to my point there, like knowing that alone would probably save you thousands of dollars, and you literally just spat out that information in a minute, and everyone listening to this just learned that, which a lot of people can avoid a lot of mistake there and money paying towards taxes. So yeah, I love that point. Point number two, educate yourself.
Definitely educate yourself and really take action. A lot of people are not taking action. They would come to us and plan these fantastic things. I always remember in my early days, I sit down with the clients with the initial planning session, and they would tell me, I'm going to buy 10 properties. I'm going to retire with these. Nothing happened for many, many years, and they are still our clients. Nothing wrong against them. But then they come back and like, why am I paying you setting up all these structure? I'm like, well, because, you know, like many years ago, you told us this is what you want, but you not done anything. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that make a difference as well. And work with also a mortgage agent. I think if you have a good mortgage agent on your side, understand real estate investor and how to structure it, especially if you are planning to grow your portfolio. They will advise you like how to position yourself so then you can buy as many properties as possible. Mm-hmm. So those are a few tips. The last thing, I see a lot of failure, not necessarily accounting related, but somewhat accounting tax related, is that people don't have a system. Majority of the entrepreneurs, real estate investors included, they don't like to hire people, which is fine. If you don't hire people to do the work for you, that means you are the one doing the work. You just have to do the work and accept the fact that you need to do those work. So this includes, hey, tracking everything that you spend on, every single line item on your bank statement. You need to be able to tell your accountant what you're spending on, where the money goes. If you transfer the money from one account to another property account, write that down while it's still fresh, or document it or print it into PDF and save it in your internal drive. Mm-hmm. So then there is a record of something. Make sure that you stay on top of that bookkeeping and accounting schedule, especially for those people who are scaling and using other people's money, especially for those people who are using joint venture partner to partner up, because your joint venture partner expects you to be the expert, which includes setting up the system, which includes reporting. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, hey, buy the property and we'll split the profit type of thing. It has to have some sort of record. We can only help so much because, like I mentioned before, a lot of people just come to us at the end. And then now we have to go back and ask you, hey, like, where is this transfer going to? Is it to your own accounts, or who pay you that money? Or is it from your joint venture's investment? We don't know. And you are supposed to be the one. Even if we can do all the bookkeeping and everything, at the end of the day, someone has to share with us what that transaction means. Mm-hmm. correspond that and relate that to the system.
Exactly. I feel like I've made that mistake in the past before too, of like not feeling like I was in deep enough to invest in those systems, but then also like totally neglecting the fact that it was my responsibility to do those jobs. So like for our mortgage business, obviously we have all these systems in place and we're super organized there. But when it came to like my investment property, my accountant was like, where's this and this? I'm like, honestly, I just have no idea. I can hire a bookkeeper because I screwed that up. But it's things you learn. And I think perspective definitely helps. So it's great to partner with people like yourself who have both the wealth of experience and the perspective to say, hey, here's why this needs to happen. And here's the steps to take and just follow it. And it makes life so much easier. And I don't know about the two of you, but I would rather pay for a couple extra hours to consult with someone and save the headache, then deal with the headache. And then ultimately at the end of the day, probably still have to pay that person to undo your mistake and then any extra charges that you've incurred from the government in the meantime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so one of your points you made too, it's kind of like a fine balance between being over-prepared and being under-prepared. Like to give you an example of my investing journey, like my first rental property in the States, I ended up incorporating in the wrong state because I thought I was going to be investing in this one state at first. And then I flipped the script and I was like, hey, I actually want to go to this state. So I wasted money setting up the corporation. And I thought I was doing a service to myself by being prepared, getting it all set up first. And then I learned after that, it's better to buy the property first and then set up the corporation after.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how we advise our client too. Like, what if you don't buy at all, right? Yeah. We have some of those clients who set up the corporation, never bought.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for sure. So Cherry, there's one thing that as mortgage brokers, we've been getting a lot of questions on, and I was just on your YouTube earlier and I saw that you had addressed it. So I thought maybe we could touch on it briefly. And that is the bare trusts, the trust agreements for how it relates to people who have co-signed for family members. Mm-hmm. Can you touch on that, on what people should look out for and kind of how to prepare for things like this?
So there are multiple things in this new type of reporting. Basically in Canada and also in the US, my understanding is in the US, the same rule applied starting also this particular year. So when I hear a lot of rumbling noises in the marketplace complaining about this rule, and I'm like, you can't really escape it, because even if you want to move south, you still have to be exposed to this type of similar reporting requirement. Basically, Justin Trudeau's government came out and said, hey, we really want to know who truly owns the account, who truly owns the property. Because in the old days, and even now it's still allowed, essentially you can go on title, legal title of the property, but you're not the true owner. The true owner could be someone else. So you could be the one that's going on title, qualifying for financing, you're the legal title owner. The true owner, which we normally call beneficial owner, would be different. So it could be your daughter or your mom living in that property, but you're just going on title to help them qualify for financing because they can't be on title and they can't qualify for financing. So there is a mismatch between the legal owner and the beneficial owner. This relationship always exists, and it was essentially adopted all the way from like some old England law. We adopted that in Canada, and that is allowed. And in the past, there is no reporting required by CRA. So the government doesn't really know who the true owner is. And truth to be told, 99% of the time, your legal title owner equals a beneficial owner. Like I live in my own house, I own the house, I reap the benefit of using the house, I'm the true beneficial owner. 99% of the time they equal each other, so there is no issue. But it is only at situation where they are not the same. So the two, they are not equal each other, then now the CRA wants to tighten up the rule. They want to know who the true owners are, and therefore they come out and say, hey, starting from January 1st, 2023, if you have a true beneficial owner and the legal owner is really truly a bare trustee, essentially holding title in trust for someone else, under that scenario, you're now required to report to us as CRA who your true beneficial owner is. You have to tell us you are just the legal title owner. Now, going back to your example, one of the most common examples is that people go on title to qualify for financing for their loved one. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they go on title, they are the only one that's on title, their mom lives in the property. You now have a bare trust relationship, even though it's not written anywhere, not documented anywhere, but your mom is the true owner of the property. She pays for all the expenses, property taxes, and everything. She's the owner of the property, but because she can't get financing and therefore she's not on title. So then there is a mismatch, and now you have the filing obligation and you have to file a T3 trust return. And the deadline to file that is April 2nd. Now, if you don't file it on time this year, CIA does say that they're going to waive the penalty.
Okay.
However, there's a gross negligence penalty that they could potentially come out and say, hey, you know that you have to do the work and you're not doing it, and therefore we hit you with the gross negligence penalty. Then there is that fine line, that gray area, essentially, hey, like what is called gross negligence?
Yeah.
When do I need to file? And are they going to impose that? So right now, what we're saying is that try your best to file before April 2nd. File that. Even if you're late, make sure you still file it if you have that type of relationship.
For sure. It's one of those things that I think people are so confused that a lot of people just aren't going to do it. And that falls in the negligence category. It's what I said to someone this morning. I was like, call your accountant, discuss the scenario with them, and they'll tell you if you need to file or not. But like, don't just not do it because you feel you don't understand how things work right now. And that's a little bit concerning. They were like, I found this on TikTok. This is the only reason I heard about it. And I was like, it is a little bit concerning that this coming top down from the federal government, you're finding out on TikTok, not through the government. But
it is everywhere though.
Yeah. So for these people though, I've also heard that say you co-sign for your child and you're listed on title, you could then say, oh no, I actually have an equity position in the home and not need to file that as a way to get out of it as well. But from the sounds of things, it's just a filing. It's not an extra form of taxation. Is that correct?
No. So using your exact example, let's say you co-sign with your daughter, and I don't know what this percentage you're co-signing for. Sometimes it's 1%. Then upon sale of that property, you're technically required to report that 1%. Now, if it doesn't specify as 1% and all the money came from you, and essentially the adult child is still a child and not paying for anything, everything comes from you, then arguably you could have like a 50% stake or even like bigger equity portion.
Mm-hmm.
What it really means is that by not filing, you are saying that you are also the beneficial owner.
Okay.
You're saying that you're the true owner. So then when you sell the property, the implication is what's down the road. So people don't get, oh, the trust filing is just, you know, like who cares? It's information return. But there is implication down the road when you sell the property.
Yeah.
So in your particular example, if that person doesn't specify that they own the 50% or 1%, if it is 50-50, then the parent would have to then report that 50% of capital gain. It's not necessarily a bad idea, but there is that tax implication as well.
Yeah, I think it's an information return in 2024. 2027, there will be some form of tax tied to it. So it is something down the road that will bite us.
Not directly, but by saying one thing today, then you are also absorbing having that tax implication a few years down the road, right?
100%.
I find it crazy that it's not public knowledge that everyone is getting notified on this. Like, I heard it from you, Brandon, and you heard it from TikTok. It's like nobody's really telling us. And I guess it really does come down to your accountant being proactive, I imagine.
Yeah, I spoke to my accountant about it because he was like, do you have any of these arrangements set up? And I was like, no. So I knew from my accountant, but like someone who reached out to me, they're like, I just use like
TurboTax.
Yeah, something like that, like a bookkeeper and whatever. And like, they didn't tell me, they don't know about this. So it's a little bit scary that way.
I wouldn't say the government has made a lot of announcements, but the law has come into effect for a couple of years already. They have just delayed implementation.
Okay.
To be fair, the news outlet has been like crazy on this quite a bit, but because the minute that you see trust return, people automatically glance over it.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
Hey, I don't have a trust, right?
Yeah.
So then they glance over it. So even with my YouTube video, what I do at the beginning is new CLA reporting rule that would affect you rather than trust. If I mention trust, then nobody is going to click there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Everyone thinks trust fund kids.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't even cue into your brain as this being relevant.
So exactly.
Have you co-signed for your child? This has an impact.
There you go. Yeah, it's a good hook.
Yeah, there you go. We're all going to leave with a new YouTube video, Sherry. So just to quickly recap, the three biggest takeaways from this is plan early, involve your partners in that planning process. Once you have that strategy and kind of the direction where you want to point the ship, educate yourself as much as possible, be it podcasts, YouTube, Instagram, whatever you can pull, educate yourself on those pieces and use that to build out a system, and the system ultimately will guide you towards that final goal.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Wonderful.
All right, Cherry, thank you very much for joining us today. It's a pleasure. And if anyone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
It would be on my website, realestatetaxtips.ca. I'm there and you can sign up for lots of different easy to understand webinar. You'll get notification for our events and you'll get notification to all the YouTube video that I publish as well. Yeah, that would be the easiest.
Awesome. We'll have it in the show notes for you as well.
Exactly. Awesome. Thank you so much, Cherry. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It was a blast.
Cheers.